Good morning, Faithbridge. How y'all doing? Wow. I like what you did with the digs, the place. It's I've only been gone for a few months, and I'm in a different building. And but I have to just talk about it. If you're online or in our amazing West Communion Service, I just, you know, we got to talk about it. Yesterday, can we talk about it? Can we just talk about it? Yeah, like we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it. Rice won 14 to 12. Strong. That's how you start the season, Rice. Okay, we're going to talk about it. Texas A&M coming in strong. Yes, you did. No hissing at me tonight. Oh, let's talk about the Cougars. Houston. Yes, well done. And Baylor did not show up against Auburn, which Chip and Joe are not happy. And was there another game? I don't remember. I still believe in Arch, and I think if there's anyone who is like a perfect example of David, it's got to be Arch Manning, isn't it? Just went from obscurity to anointing. And then yesterday happened, but he's going to be amazing. Texas is going to be fine. You're going to be all right. But I'm so excited to be in this David series. And I'm going to be teaching from a passage that I know is very, very familiar to every single one of you. This is probably one of the first sermons you ever heard back when you were a child. You probably went through VBS and you heard this story. You went through Kidsmen. And especially if you grew up here, you learned this story in a powerful, powerful way. But I want to come at it a little bit different. Because I don't know about you, but do you ever find that there is irrational fear? Irrational fear. And sometimes the irrational fear does something in us where it's almost as if we miss the point, miss the plot, we miss what God is doing, and then sometimes we just need a young shepherd to remind us how we are to orient our one and only life. So if you need a Bible, feel free to raise your hands. Our incredible ushers would love to get you a Bible. And then you can turn, once you get a Bible, or if you have one, to 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is the story of David and Goliath. Now, I'll start in verse 1, read a few verses, and then I'll stop and make some observations. But I really want to go after irrational fear. And I honestly, I think if you go on Facebook, there's oftentimes irrational fear. If you go on Twitter, irrational fear. There is often irrational fear that is like holding us in check. And there is a better way. So 1 Samuel 17, verse 1 says this. Now the Philistines, who were like the arch nemesis. This was the big rivalry of the ancient Near East, the Israelites and the Philistines. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Sokol in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damin. And again, remember, if you're reading publicly and you don't know how to pronounce a phrase or word, just read it quickly and with authority and move on. Between Soko and Azekah, Saul and the Israelites, Saul's the king, and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley in between. Now, in 1 Samuel 17, we see in an entire army the actual people of God paralyzed by fear. And they're going to be paralyzed by fear because one man by the name of Goliath, a giant, steps out and suddenly trained warriors start shaking in their boots. These are the very people who had seen God split the Red Sea, tear down Jericho's walls, and yet one giant, and they crumbled. I mean, these are the people who had heard the stories of all that God had done, and yet this giant from the Philistines is about to walk out. And when he walks out, it is going to shake the Israelite people to their core. Because this is what fear does, number one. First point, fear shrinks vision. And this is, in my opinion, what vision is. Vision is a compelling picture of a preferred future that rallies people with great passion towards a shared goal. That's what great leadership vision is. But vision isn't just trying to climb a hill. Sometimes vision can actually get you stuck on the sidelines. The Israelites' vision, once they see this massive behemoth by the name of Goliath, they have a compelling picture of a preferred future, which is not to die, which rallies an entire nation to stay on the sidelines with great fear. And they are together in a shared goal, not to die. And see, this is what fear does. Anytime you have fear, it shrinks a vision. It shrinks a purpose. It shrinks the worldview that God has for his local church. What you see in verse 4, it says a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, which were very, very in style back then. I don't know if you ever wear bronze greaves, but I'm just telling you, they were awesome. And a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. And I think this is pretty amazing, because in the Message translation of this verse, Eugene Peterson says that all of the armor together weighed 126 pounds. So this is how big Goliath was. This is all the armor, all the bronze, weighed a middle school child on him. And he comes into battle, and he's got a person in front of him. And so he steps across the battle lines, and he has some words. He begins to speak up. And so Goliath, verse 8, stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel, give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul, the king, anointed by God, and all the Israelites were dismayed and feared. That's amazing. It's just all of a sudden, so easy. This is what fear does. It shrinks the vision. But more than that, fear paralyzes our purpose. Fear paralyzes our purpose. Fear paralyzes our calling. This was the Israelites, the Hebrew people. They had been anointed. They had been blessed. God had gone before them. God was with them. And then in this moment, they allow someone to defy Yahweh. And great fear comes over them. And these trained soldiers and a trained king, and yet they forgot who they were. Warriors became warriors. And do you ever meet those people? Like in one kind of facet of their life, they are a warrior. They will attack an issue, attack a problem. They have something what the Jewish people would call chutzpah. There is passion, earnest desire to see things happen. And then sometimes the curveball comes and the warrior becomes a worrier. Maybe for some of you, this is your story right now. And maybe you find yourself just worrying about all that's happening in the world. And sometimes I wonder, like, do we think God is surprised? Do we think God's up there going, oh my goodness, what's going on? Oh my goodness. Wow. And sometimes we can get so caught up where that warrior calling, we become people who are just almost fixated on worry. And for 40 days, Goliath just keeps coming out and defying and speaking lies about Yahweh and about the Hebrew people. And for 40 days, they run up, and then they hear him, and then they run away. 40 days. Felt like me at a junior high dance. Ran up to the girl, and then ran away. Just got nervous. But this is what irrational fear does. It makes us forget the battles God has already brought us through. The question maybe we should be asking ourselves is this: where are you armed but not acting? And where has fear kept you from stepping into God's call? Again, I don't want to just throw shade on fear, because fear often is a clue and it's a key and it's an invitation. But just like doubt to the Jewish people, doubt was okay as long as it didn't paralyze you. To have fear, it's okay, as long as it doesn't paralyze you. Of course you're gonna have fear if you're looking at Goliath. But the kind of fear that speaks louder than God's promise or God's power or what God has done in the past, that's when fear and the paralyzing nature of it affects our calling. But this is the other interesting piece, is what fear does is it doesn't just shrink our vision, and it doesn't just paralyze our purpose and calling. Fear fixates on the wrong giant. This is what fear will do. It will fixate on the wrong giant. And what I mean by this is the entire nation of Israel found themselves looking, going, bronze greaves, 126 pounds of just pure armor on his back. Look how tall he is. And do you ever find yourself just fixating over something that is so minuscule in comparison to the full scope of reality? I know I do. I can find myself just, after even a great weekend service, finding myself fixating over one sentence one person said to me in an email. Why? But somehow we find ourselves fixated on the wrong giant. Maybe for you, you fixate over what a boss said, and in your mind, you're just kind of thinking and beginning to imagine and perceive what you think your boss implied. And the truth is, people are very, very perceptive. They're just not very good interpreters of reality. And we can perceive something, but it's the stories that we tell and create out of our perception that is everything. If you have a high schooler, a college student, a middle schooler, a child that's third, fourth, fifth grade, what your job as a parent is to help them actually begin to interpret what they are perceiving, not from what culture tells them, or what they feel, but what the Bible says is true about them. And you can only do that if you begin to practice that yourself, because again, our culture and media will have you fixating again and again on the wrong giant. And when you keep staring at the wrong giant, you will forget the greater one who is fighting on your behalf. Even when you don't see it, even when you don't feel it, even when you don't know it. But the fourth point that I need you to see And we're going to skip down a handful of verses to verse 28. But what I want you to see is fear is contagious, but so is faith. Fear is contagious, but so is faith. Look at verse 28. It says this: when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men. So let me give a little bit of context here. David's just a shepherd boy. And I love this whole series from shepherd to king. And as the eighth son, the father, Jesse, it said, hey, go bring some cheese to your brothers. Three brothers were on the battle lines. Give us an update because we don't have any news or Wi-Fi. We can't see what is actually happening. And so David gets sent there. And when he gets sent there, he finds himself walking right up to the battle lines. And he sees this giant defying Yahweh. And in the moment, he starts having conversations with people like, what's going on? And people begin to tell him, oh, you know, whoever chooses to fight that giant, Saul will give him a daughter. Their family won't have to pay taxes. That should have been like right then and there. Can you imagine going the rest of your life not having to pay taxes? I'm not saying I'm running for president, but if I ran for president, here's what I would do. I would give, like, every year would have a different reward. You're like 36, you don't have to pay insurance that year. 42, electricity bill, doesn't matter. You are free. 51, no credit card debt ever for that year. You know what I mean? That's what I would do. I'm just saying. Carter Werlein, 2026. Here we go. Here we go, friends. Now, so we get, hey, you guys are all cheering about that. Wow, that's amazing. I don't know if that's just because you're like, get Steve off the pulpit. Get him back into Iowa. No, here we go. 28, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard David speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. This is what's really, really tricky, because sometimes even when you have the most pure intentions, somebody else is going to perceive your intentions in the wrong way and interpret them in the wrong way. And they're going to say, oh, you're just conceited. Shouldn't you go back to the responsibility of the few sheep, the little bit of sheep that you have? Like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. And it's in these moments where fear becomes so contagious that we can so easily find ourselves taking shots at another person. Or when you find yourself getting curious to see the giant and not get fixated on the wrong giant. Other people who are kind of just controlled by fear, and the warrior who has become a worrier is now just trying to shut you down. And for some of us, that sidelines us. It holds us back. But if you get to verse 32 through 37, I love this because it's here where Saul begins to hear, hey, there's actually someone who is very intrigued about wanting to fight Goliath. And Saul's like, bring him here. And I imagine he's like, I wonder who it could be. What family, what tribe? I wonder how tall he is. Is he 6'3"? I wonder what like his weapon of choice is. And then who shows up? David. All of a sudden, David said to Saul, let no one, verse 32, lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Now, he's a shepherd. A shepherd is probably somewhere between 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. And you've got Goliath, who has the armor that basically is how much David weighs. And David just is like, don't let him lose heart. I got this. And Saul replied, you are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. And it's in this moment where David's been basically just shot down by the king, and he has the chutzpah, the audacity, to look Saul in the eye. And look what he says. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep when a lion or a bear or a packer or a Viking came and carried off a sheep from the flock." That's an NFL joke. I'm sorry. It really works in Chicago. But I went after it. I went after the bear. I went after the lion. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of a lion and the paw of a bear will rescue me from the hand of the Philistine. Can you imagine? You're the king and you have been gripped and paralyzed by fear. It has shrunk your vision. And you're finding yourself in this moment, and all of a sudden, some kid goes, hey, my God's got me, because I fought a bear. I fought a lion. Here's the real truth. When you actually go up against fear, and you do it in the right kingdom perspective way, you are actually building spiritual musculature. David had no idea by fighting a bear that someday it would prepare him to be king. David had no idea by fighting a lion it would prepare him to take down a giant. But all David was faithful in that moment. But if he would have let fear win when the bear took a sheep or when the lion took a sheep, there is no way he would have been prepared to face Goliath. So the battles that you face every single day matter, friends, because fear wants to keep you small. Fear wants to just shrink your vision. Fear wants to paralyze your calling. Fear is contagious. But I think what's so beautiful is the only way through fear is fixing your eyes on God. And this is what David does so well. David models it. And this is what's so wild is he models it, and he's a middle schooler. He shows and even speaks to Saul, who was the anointed one. Like, Saul, you should be the one that's leading the challenge and the call to fight for God's glory and God's honor. But no. But in verse 41, it says this, and meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was a little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome. And he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." And then David just spoke with audacity to the king, now is looking at this giant, and he said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." Talk about amazing speech. This giant's like, "What, you come at me with dog, like with sticks? What am I, a dog?" And David's like, "You know what? You keep running your mouth. You keep running your mouth. Because here's what's going to happen. I'm not coming at you with weapons. I'm coming at you with Yahweh, with the Lord Almighty. He's got my back. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take you down, but I'm not just going to take you down. I'm going to cut your head off." You're like, wow, all right, David. Which, by the way, if you ever read the Psalms, Psalms like David is just so honest in his like earnest prayers to God. My enemies, Lord, I can't stand them. I just want to beat their head on the rocks and watch their blood drip. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And you're like, what in the world? And like, this is just how David was. He just could speak what he was thinking and he believed it so deeply. And then in verse 48 through 53, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him, reaching into his bag and taking out a stone. They say he had five, one for each of the Torah, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It's what the rabbis would teach. He slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with slinging a stone without a sword in his hand. He struck the Philistine and killed him. And David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath and he killed him. He cut off his head with the sword. And when the Philistines saw that their hero was gone, they fled. And all of Israel went chasing after him. They plundered everything. David took all of Goliath's like armor, brought it back, put it in his tent. But again, I need you just to see verse 54 and 57. 54 says this, David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapons in his own tent. Verse 57, as soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with David still holding the Philistine's head. Can you just imagine just like seeing a middle school boy just like with a head? It's like, hey, Saul, I haven't even gone through puberty yet, but like this is what I did. This is what I did. I'm just going to hold on to it. I just want all of you to know what the Lord did. And just, I can just imagine him just pulling the hair and just lifting it up and talking with emotion and his hands and this head. And I didn't have a prop of a head that I could use or I would. And he's just talking. And I can imagine how beautiful and frustrating that must have been from every other Israelite male who forgot their calling. See, here's the big truth, friends. Giants fall when faith stands tall. When faith stands tall, giants fall. And friends, I need you to know this. Every single one of you is facing a giant or is about to face a giant. So let's play this out just for a moment. Let's play it out. I want you to understand that there is something about this story that I think is really, really practical. First is this. You will have a giant standing. You have to name that giant. What is it? What is causing fear in your life? Maybe it's actually addressing an addiction. Maybe it's being honest about the state of your marriage. Maybe it is like really about where you are financially. Maybe it's about something that's happening in the workplace or in your community. But you gotta name the giant. But then two, you gotta be able to set the scene. And the scene was set in the Valley of Elah. The scene was set. You had Goliath, the giant, coming out. But you gotta find yourself visualizing that scene. What's it gonna look like? What's it gonna feel like? Am I just gonna be someone who's on the sidelines? Or am I actually gonna step forward in faith? But more than that, you gotta actually really decide what's gonna be the faith move. What's your faith move? In the face of fear, what is your faith move? My dad would always say, when I got my fourth foul in basketball in high school, in the first half, he'd come up to me and I was frustrated. I was like, those refs. My dad would always look at me and say, change adversity into opportunity. The faith move sees the adversity, but it sees more of an opportunity for God to move. And then beyond that, you don't just gotta name the giant. You don't just gotta visualize the scene that is set. You don't just gotta describe and decide the faith move. You gotta pray and get ready to watch the downfall of the giant. This is not just some story from 1 Samuel 17. This is something that happens in history. Because I'm telling you, fear has this irrational way of making giants look bigger than God. Fear will shrink your vision. Fear will paralyze your calling. Fear keeps you stuck on the sidelines. But history has been replaying this same story again and again, day after day, over and over. I can tell you about December 1st, 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama, when Rosa Parks boards a bus. The giant of segregation looms large, and fear whispers, "Stay quiet. Don't make trouble. You can't win." But Rosa Parks sat still. She later said, "I had the strength of God in me." And that single act of faith sparked a movement that toppled a giant. Same scene, 18th century, Britain, the parliament was paralyzed. The giant, the slave trade, too powerful, too profitable, too big to fail. But William Wilberforce kept standing year after year, speech after speech, fueled by faith, and eventually the giant fell. Friends, from the Valley of Elah to Montgomery, Alabama, to the British Parliament, to Greater Houston, giants fall when faith stands tall. And the same God who gave David the courage to run toward Goliath, who gave Rosa Parks the strength to sit still, who gave Wilberforce the conviction to keep fighting, that same God is with you, Faith Bridge. So let me ask you, what giants are you staring down today? Because the battle belongs to the Lord. And every fear, you gotta lay at someone's feet. You're gonna lay it at your feet, and it's gonna keep you on the sidelines, or you're gonna have a chance to name those fears and lay them at the feet of the one whose battle it truly is. You have a chance right now to look at the giant, to visualize the scene, to understand what your faith move will be so that that giant falls down. The truth is, you gotta remember that God goes with us, God goes before us, and God wins every battle, and nothing can stand against the power of our God. My friends, would you stand to your feet? Because right now, I wanna give us the chance to declare in response the battle that you are fighting right now for your family, the battle that you are fighting for your kids who are drifting from God, the battle that you are fighting for the beautiful biblical values in today's culture. That needs us to be people of faith. And so God, I just pray right now that we would have that spirit of David, and we wouldn't be people on the sidelines. We wouldn't have fear shrinking our vision, but we would know that when faith stands tall, giants fall. And God, we need some giants to fall. We need to break out of that malaise of fear that shrinks our faith. And so God, I pray this wouldn't just be a song. It would be a battle cry. It would be our faith move to say, Lord, this battle, whatever I'm facing, it belongs to you. So let me sing this in response to your goodness. We love you, Lord, and all God's people said, amen.